At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
When Ryan's, when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the 18. That makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, downloaded Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade Take the Mic.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rewind Around. It is John Pollock, joined as always by Waiting. Hello, Way.
Hey, John. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. There are fireworks going on outside that I can hear, and hopefully you cannot hear.
I can't hear them, but I might hear them outside my own window too. 11 o'clock is pretty late to be doing fireworks, I think.
It's a work night for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Fireworks are generally kind of silly, like just in and of itself. Like, how can we celebrate this? Let's blow up stuff in the sky.
Yeah.
Who came up with that?
The Chinese.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Pretty sure.
Well, never really got the appeal of fireworks. I mean, they're nice and all, but
how do you like to celebrate?
By going live with you on a Monday night at 11:09 p.m. That's how I like to celebrate Canada's latest trip around the sun.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if many would share the same feelings, but here we are.
Did you do anything fun on the holiday Monday?
Yeah, yeah. I took Oscar out for a walk. It's just beautiful weather right now, so I really do feel like it's important to take advantage of every single second we have of, like, nice weather. And, yeah, my dad came over. We just kind of chilled on the backyard. Took a little nap outside even. It was wonderful, actually.
You had a nap outside?
Oh, mm-hmm.
That sounds fun.
What about you?
I went for a long bike ride. I went by the to like the waterfront area. I just went through
the Martin Goodman Trail.
I guess that's what it's called. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just went out on my bike for a long time. That was kind of what I did in between wrestling stuff, I guess. That was about it.
And you enjoyed yourself?
I did. I had quite an enjoyable bike ride.
Okay. Great. Excellent. Happy to hear it.
That's it.
You're enjoying your life.
I can't enjoy it any more than this.
Great.
We have a lot to discuss. I have nothing more to add than that. It was a bike ride that I will never think about again, but it was enjoyable for the time it lasted.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe you just need some fireworks in your life.
Perhaps. Well, everyone, we are going to have some explosive programming on the Post Wrestling Cafe this month. It's July. It's a big month. And we are going to be kicking things off this week. WrestleMania 9 from Caesar's Palace, Las Vegas, Nevada. Bret Hart, Yokozuna, The Undertaker against Giant Gonzalez, The Narcissist versus Mr. Perfect. This is a dreadful show on paper. What will WrestleMania 9 present to us under our 2024 eyes? Tune in this coming Thursday, as we will find out how a one-eyed Hulk Hogan left with the WWF Championship.
This was my first WrestleMania that I've ever watched, so it holds a very special place in my heart. I remember almost all of it very, very vividly. So I'm kind of looking forward to talking about it. I don't think we've ever reviewed this show.
We have. Because I was doing research and I didn't recall if we had, and this came up on YouTube and I listened to ourselves, who somehow did a whole review of this in like 60 minutes. I was like, man, were we efficient back in the day?
You're kidding. Okay. Well, are you sure that was me and it wasn't somebody else you were podcasting with?
I clicked on it, dude. You sound so different.
Really?
I'm not going to listen. It doesn't, it, 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 it isn't noticeable to me, but you are so much more active and talkative now than you were back then.
Oh, goodness.
I felt like I was just like trying to pull anything out of you.
Oh, sorry, I can't play that.
We definitely don't. Are we going to get flagged now?
Yeah, it is up there. So if you want to listen to our original WrestleMania 9 review from 8 years ago, it is up in YouTube on the Laws YouTube channel, which does still exist. Let us know if we sound any different.
Yes. Yeah. So anyway, that is coming up on Thursday. And then later on this month, we're going to do a Rewind Away on the WWF Invasion pay-per-view. That's going to be coming out on July the 19th. So those will be the two Rewind Aways coming out this month. Plus, for the month of July, that means G1 season is kicking off. So beginning the weekend of July 20th and 21st, we will be rolling out our G1 podcasts. Way and I will be jumping on and covering some of them. You're going to be hearing from Bruce Lord, Karen Peterson, Kate from Montreal, Eric Marcotte. So W.H. Park on top of that. So lots of great G1 coverage, and it all begins July 20th and 21st for all members at the Post Wrestling Cafe. We've got the X-Men rewatches coming out each week. So Rich Fan and WH Park, they'll be tackling Logan, X-Men First Class, and the first two Deadpool movies. All of this a lead up to Deadpool and Wolverine next month, where I will join WH and Rich to chat about the latest Marvel release.
Yeah, I'll be a guest on one of the episodes this month as well. Brandon from New Jersey will actually be guesting with them to talk about Logan this coming Thursday. So they've been doing a great job going through all of them. I actually like find it to be a wonderful way of getting hyped for Deadpool and Wolverine out later. So join them for that.
And then we will also have a double shot at some point in the coming week or so, looking at the WrestleMania documentary Behind the Curtain, which will be released on Wednesday. So look out for that. And of course, Rewind to SmackDown, Collision Course every Friday and Saturday coming into your feed. So $6 gets you all of this extra coverage on the Post Wrestling Cafe. A great month to sign up because it is probably our busiest month on the cafe with all the extra G1 coverage that is in there. And getting to hear Wei talk about Deadpool.
Oh, getting to hear John talk about your entire journey through this X-Men catalog. Are you still keeping up to date?
I have to watch. I'm all up to date on their reviews so far. I think we were the most in sync with the Wolverine. It seemed to be a generally well-received movie overall. Right. So I've been higher on these movies than they have by and large.
Mm-hmm. Which overall is great. Did you watch Logan?
I haven't watched the Logan yet.
Okay. Curious to hear your
thoughts.
Good? Yes.
It is.
I don't want to ruin it for you. I really don't want to spoil your pure analysis.
Well, it's we will see. It's a lengthier one.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to take marks off for that?
No, I mean I do watch these at a bit of an increased speed.
Do you? Okay.
Is that weird for a movie?
Yeah, a little, but I understand.
Time is money. So, all right. There you go, postwrestlingcafe.com, and we are going to have lots of stuff coming up this week. Want to make mention that on Wednesday on Pollock and Thurston, we're going to be joined by Matt Camp. He was the former host of The Bump on WWE.com. He is now, he has left WWE. He is now doing his own YouTube channel. He's been doing a lot of videos about his time at WWE and being part of The Bump. He recently did a video about how they almost had Anthony Fauci on The Bump, which I find very intriguing. He was there he got hired in 2019, and that's when they launched The Bump. And then, of course, the pandemic began. So he's in the middle of all of that throughout the pandemic and was there up until just earlier this year. He's been very very, very open about his time at WWE. So I'm looking forward to chatting with him this Wednesday with Brandon Thurston. And then we will have all of our regular shows, including MCU Later, Rewind Away. Friday night, Wei and I will be live after SmackDown in Toronto, although neither of us are going to SmackDown. At least I'm not. I don't think Wei is either.
No, I'm not. No.
Okay. And then we'll have coverage throughout the weekend with Money in the Bank weekend. And final in-house plug is, of course, for Saturday, 2 p.m., at Wide Open in Toronto, Spadina and Richmond, 139A Spadina Avenue. It is the cash-in. We hope to see all of you there. 2 p.m., you can show up and then make your way over to Money in the Bank, which has a 7 p.m. start time. So make sure you are aware of the start time for Money in the Bank, but it's very close by, so you won't need too much time. And this is a free event as well, so just show up. Hang out with us for a couple hours before Money in the Bank, and we hope to see many of you there this coming Saturday for the cash-in. Braden Harrington, Davey Portman will be there. W.H. Park is going to be showing up. John Cena, Dan Lavransky, I believe, is going to be making out, and who knows who else might just pop by.
The forecast at the moment for Saturday is supposed to be a high of 27, so it will be a very hot one. So, yeah. Dress appropriately?
I guess so. Yeah, don't wear a jacket. That would be the best option. Mm. It's going to be very hot in Toronto if you are traveling in from, I don't know, somewhere cold. Let's chat about a couple of news items and then we'll get to Raw. Tony Khan did the press conference afterward. They're really starting to somewhat streamline these press conferences. Like they bring out the talent, and this is less of, I mean, it's kind of always been the case for the talent where they've limited them to X amount of questions, but they're also keeping Tony more on. These are not these 2+ hour press conferences that I'm not necessarily complaining about, but it is interesting. It says Renee is there to kind of play the quarterback to keep things on track. And once it's time to wrap, last question for Tony Khan. So, I mean, you didn't get a whole lot out of these. He was asked about, you know, the main stuff was the business of the show. And he stated they drew over 11,000 at the UBS Arena and did, in fact, hit a $1 million gate, which is not insignificant. The fact that this is the third year in a row Forbidden Door has hit a seven-figure gate. But this is also 2 days after SmackDown sold out Madison Square Garden. And we're talking like pretty much the same market on top of this. In terms of the pay-per-views, he said all he knew so far was the digital buys and was not going so far as to say it's projected to be above last year's, but he said the numbers were very promising, looked very good. But I mean, you kind of have to read into the vagueness, and he was positive about the number. That's all you could really take from it. But did you get a chance to see it? And of any of the people that spoke, I thought Swerve Strickland was very good, as was Zack Sabre Jr. I didn't get to see everybody, but those two I saw, and I thought both were really great.
Yeah, I saw the press conference, and I for one, am really grateful that they're not just these incredibly long-winded sort of, you know, aimless types of things anymore. And I think the people that are working there, the poor people in production, like the poor people that are talents that have to await, you know, time to get up on stage after these, you know, 5-hour pay-per-views, I'm sure they're very grateful that these are now contained to, what, an hour and a half? Sometimes an hour, actually, even. Of the people that spoke, of the talents at least, I was very pleasantly surprised to hear Zack Sabre Jr. get like a pretty lengthy amount of time to speak. Now, it was a very different Zack Sabre Jr. from what you might get, you know, backstage at like Corcoran Hall, for instance. Like, he wasn't really wisecracking. He wasn't really kind of making fun of like conservatives and people who eat meat.
He didn't call Will a Tory.
No, he did not. Yeah.
No.
But
he treated this like a real press conference. Like and he could have played the Zack Sabre Jr. you would expect, like backstage at a Corcoran Hall. And he approached it like, this is a serious press conference. And I, like, selfishly, that's what I preferred. And I thought you got a whole lot more depth and just, I found him to be a lot more interesting. He could have been very entertaining for his 10 minutes and just done comedy, but he opted to do this, and I thought it was a lot more effective.
Well, I thought he was very entertaining in how authentic he was being in answering a lot of these questions, you know? Like, felt to me like somebody who could be a great representative on the English-speaking side of things for New Japan Pro Wrestling. So that seems to be like what he's publicly stating that he wants to be. I thought this was a really good sign for that. Beyond that, you know, you had your, at this point, like, expected Toni Storm scene. And I think she did great, you know, came out here and just like basically opened the stage for Mina Shirakawa to come out, do a dance, and it presented her with a Statue of Liberty crown. It's a part of the show. It's not really going to be for everybody, but at this point I expect it, and I admire how much she commits to it.
Ricochet, he is now officially a free agent Fightful Select reporting that at the stroke of midnight, as it became July 1st, he is now officially a free agent with his WWE contract expiring. And the site confirms that Ricochet's deal with the company expired, and the company has now moved him to their alumni section as of June the 30th. Sources within both WWE and AEW expect Ricochet to join All Elite Wrestling, as Fightful Select reported on Sunday. Despite the speculation, Ricochet wasn't planned to face Will Ospreay at All In, at least as of recent weeks. So now it's the waiting game of where and when he is going to be popping up, but he is contractually free. And as well, does the alumni section also become the storyline in memoriam, or in memorial of Ricochet? Like, in story, has he expired? Like, what has happened to his character on TV?
He got so
he's
hurt.
Just gone away to a far away place.
Clearly, you know, they beat him up so bad he didn't want to come back. I don't know if you'll get any sort of explanation.
This is like that. Pamela Ewing going in after the car wreck.
It's exactly, I think, what they're going for. Yeah, very exciting. You know, I think at this point, he's the type of free agent that is receiving a lot more buzz than your typical, you know, releases or contract expirations, you know, coming out of the WWE. And as somebody who is, I think, widely considered to be a very underutilized in-ring performer, seems like a perfect fit to come in for a big main event level role in AEW. The continued speculation of like when that Will Ospreay match will take place. Well, I don't think it matters. I don't think it needs to take place at Wembley. Clearly they have other plans for Ospreay already in place, you know, heading towards that show. And I think you could do Ospreay versus Ricochet really on any of these pay-per-views that they're promoting, and it's going to be just as big of a deal.
What would you look at in terms of the New Japan option for Ricochet? Like,
yeah.
5 years ago, we would have been looking at even less than that. And not to say even going before AEW, but I think that's so much less of a component. Like, maybe it's an add-on to AEW, but I think it also does kind of put into focus like a New Japan, like in terms of just being a player that would want to go out and sign him outright in terms of him being their contractual talent in a major foreign role to come over. I don't doubt that he might have the ability to do New Japan dates, but what role could you see a New Japan playing in his thought process?
I think wrestlers, just especially like at his level, probably just enjoyed having the freedom of being able to occasionally, you know, be featured as a special attraction for a Tokyo Dome show or Dominion or something, or even a G1. It's just something that I think a lot of wrestlers want to be able to do. You know, they probably want to still continue making the most money they can for an AEW while living and being on TV consistently in North America. But to be able to occasionally pop up on a New Japan show, either in Japan or even one of these strong shows, seems like something that is something that a lot of talents are fighting for if they have that sort of clout. I also think New Japan still presents, like we saw, maybe yesterday wasn't the best example, but they still present talents in a roster that is like among the, you know, the best, and matchups that are among the best, and an in-ring style that I think for a lot of people is still the best, you know, available in professional wrestling.
There's also a big hole in New Japan that, you know, it's the idea of, you know, going back decades when, if you were an attraction, you'd look at a territory that was down that you could go and truly make a difference, and that's going to improve your stock. And I'm not saying like a Ricochet or a free agent is going to go and turn New Japan's fortunes around, but there is kind of like, let's throw out a name like a Dijak, okay? Mm-hmm. And he's taking independent bookings now. And if you're Dijak and you're looking at, you know, I could go to AEW, and the unknown is going to a New Japan or something like that, and is there more opportunity for you there to make a bit of a difference? Like, AEW is going to be here, and like, how many talents are looking at just wanting to be on national television? The upside is very high for AEW, but also, you know, you are going into a roster that there's no guarantees if you're a Dijak of what you're going to get in AEW. Whereas, you know, if the timing had worked out well, like, Dijak would have been a great foreigner to be thrown into the G1 and could have just had a great run in the G1, and he'd have this buzz coming off of the summer. And then it kind of gives him like this it kind of sheds that whole WWE label that he's going to have to shake it first.
Right. Yeah. Well, I don't exactly know how popular a Dijak is to like a Japanese audience, for instance, you know, the way a Takeshita might be, or even a John Moxley might have been at that time.
But he'd be like a Lance Archer that goes in there and no, he's not coming in with a whole lot of buzz behind him, maybe, but is someone that I think could get over really effectively.
Perhaps. Yeah. But they already have access to a Lance Archer. Do you need another Lance Archer?
Well, not this year. They don't have Lance Archer.
I guess not. Anyway, yeah, I mean, I do think for most talents that are leaving the WWE, they're going to want to at least match the money that they were hoping to make in the WWE. And I don't know how many places would have that as an option other than AEW. And maybe if you're a top star, something you can work out with a New Japan. Maybe Impact. I mean, I don't exactly know what type of money they're throwing around, but I think they're also looking for a platform as close to what they were going to get in the WWE as possible. And the clear option for a lot of people for their preference would only be AEW, I think.
Chris Jericho did an angle on Friday at Arena Mexico, attacking Místico and then cutting a promo on him in both English and Spanish. So this is going to be a really big match down the road. I mean, they've set the stage for this to be an Arena Mexico match. I don't know how quickly this one's going to be happening, but man, Jericho now has lined up. There's the obvious rematch with Hook, I think you have to do coming out of this past weekend. There's this Minoru Suzuki match, and Suzuki is coming over here in a few weeks. We know he's doing MLW, and now you have this Místico match as well. But it was interesting as well to watch the angle and the promo, and he didn't do any of the Learning Tree character. This was much closer to the Alpha character. I mean, this was him, you know, 2018 Chris Jericho just coming in as the outsider, and he's here to reclaim his house that he hasn't been to in 30 years. I thought it was a very good angle and a great promo, and I don't doubt that this will be a huge match in Mexico.
Felt very much like he was trying to redo what he did with the Kenny Omega New Japan interaction, but this time in Mexico. And I think it makes sense. Like, that is a main event level character, you know, that Alpha Chris Jericho. And the Learning Tree is a mid-card character. And he's playing to a different audience, so I think you can, you know, get away with that. I don't know if, like, Please Retire Chance will be following him to Arena Mexico, for instance. But
no, this guy's going to be a megastar in Arena Mexico.
Yeah, it's his chance to at least, you know, find a different part of the world to try to rehab his... I don't even want to say rehab because his image, because he's kind of playing to a different audience. And maybe he's just at this point looking to, you know, see where else he could make a lot of money or at least make a big impact, you know, so that he could add another notch to his career. It'll be interesting to see how much of this might be reflected on AEW television. And judging by the fact that none of this was mentioned on Forbidden Door, a show that featured Místico and CMLL interaction, it tells me that they're going to keep it pretty separate.
Some ratings from Friday. We only have limited information here, but SmackDown did 2,256,000 viewers and a 0.66 in the demo. So it was down from that really big number with CM Punk the week before, but only 3% in viewership. They were behind the Olympic trials, and Rampage did 303,000 viewers, which was a dip of 8% and a 0.09 in the 18 to 49 demographic. And then just some quick notes. Just on the MMA side, it was reported that Andrei Arlovsky, his contract is up with the UFC, so he has fought his last fight in the UFC, and this is just significant because he's had multiple tenures in the UFC, but his first fight in the promotion was November of 2000. November of 2000 at UFC 28, he would become a UFC heavyweight champion, beating Tim Sylvia. And then eventually he was the interim champion, but that's when Frank Mir had his motorcycle accident, and that was the fight they were building up, but Mir was not able to come back in time, so they elevated him to the undisputed champion. He lost the belt to Tim Sylvia, and then they had a dreadful rematch in July of... That was the Ken Shamrock, Tito Ortiz pay-per-view, the rematch, and this was on Second from the Top, and you had... This was like a glorious time in MMA when people were like... The heavyweight title, it should be headlining over Tito Ortiz and Ken Shamrock. I'm like, do you guys have like a fraction of a thought of what drew this card? But this was a dreadful, dreadful fight in 2006. Anyway, he got a great offer from Affliction. So UFC was like, by all means, you can take off. And that's where he went to Affliction. He fought Fedor Emelianenko there, one of the more devastating knockouts where he like leaped in the air and just was punched and went face first down onto the mat. It was just an unbelievable knockout. And then he went through this big losing streak in his career. He lost four in a row while fighting for Strikeforce. And then World Series of Fighting came along and he put some wins back together and the UFC re-signed him in 2014. And it was thought, okay, this will be the final run of Andrei Arlovsky. And this final run lasted 10 years. And he, you know, he got knocked out enough times that he adjusted his style. He took very little risk in his fights and they did not make for the most action-packed, I'll be polite, heavyweight bouts, as we saw on Saturday. And this was his fourth loss in a row on Saturday, and that was it for him. But this guy, second most fights in the history of the UFC, 42 UFC fights behind Jim Miller, and second most wins in history, tied with Donald Cerrone with 23. So, I mean, these are just stats that, I mean, in time, we might see some fighters approach, but I don't know. The idea of a fighter competing over 24 years in the UFC, that I don't think we're going to see at all. Like, it's unbelievable.
A fighter competing 24 years, period.
24 years, period, much less in the UFC, is just wild. Like, here's a 45-year-old that was fighting and was winning fights up until this stretch of losses that he had. And just, you know, he was a utility heavyweight that you could at least throw, and became synonymous with the UFC apex. I mean, he was just an apex fighter for quite a long time.
Is that right? So do you see him maybe making a return to AEW?
He made it very clear his UFC career is over, but his fighting career is not over. He plans to continue fighting. So where this guy ends up, bare knuckle, like I only say this half jokingly, but if he did something like Power Slap, it would not surprise me. Like, I think they had Paige VanZant compete at Power Slap on Friday, and I think that's the idea that I think they want. Like, man, you
how did she do, by the way?
She won, whatever that means. I didn't watch it, but do you know how she prepared? How she trained?
Huh?
They had, you remember, what was the WWE interviewer's name? Charlie Caruso.
Caruso, yeah.
She's the backstage reporter, and she's explaining that her husband was helping her train by slapping her as hard as she could, as he could, with pool noodles.
Okay, right.
That's the prep. So,
All right.
I don't know where he's going to fight next. He probably will, and UFC is, or I should say AEW, a wide open option for Andre the Pitbull Arlovsky, the original Pitbull. I mean, if Vince McMahon was still in power, I mean, he might have been swayed by the Pitbull. And then we have, as well, Michael Chandler has stated that he has now been offered a fight. He's been offered a title fight against Islam Makhachev for October. This is a guy who has lost three of his last four fights, but has been inactive for like almost 2 years because he's been waiting for this Conor McGregor fight. So everyone's up in arms that he has been offered a title fight for basically waiting all this time. He still wants to fight Conor McGregor at the Sphere in September. I mean, this guy is, I mean, they obviously are trying to take care of this guy. They're offering him a title fight because he has, again, lost three of his last four fights. His one win is over Tony Ferguson. Like, to justify this is insane, but they obviously feel that Armand Sarukian is not the option they want for the next lightweight title fight, and they would, they're willing to give it to Michael Chandler and put this division on ice for a couple more months. So
if you're Michael Chandler, do you take it, or do you continue waiting for Carl?
At this point, I just don't. Like, he has waited so long, and this is not a young man at this time. I don't know how much longer I would be waiting at this point. Like, when you hear from Dana White, he just seems like he doesn't even want to talk about Conor McGregor at this point, because I think very much they're just biting their tongue on how this main event fell apart for this card this past weekend. If you're Michael Chandler, like, this would be the last opportunity you would ever have to fight for the lightweight title. I don't think he is deserving of one, but he's being offered it, so you can't fault the guy for taking it. And I wouldn't favor him in this fight at all, but I would be looking at the title fight as the guarantee, because you know that you are going to fight Islam in October unless some wild situation occurred. Whereas Conor, it's a total gamble at this point that you could be waiting another year for all you know. All right. And then the last thing is just NXT on Tuesday night. They've announced opening the show is a street fight with Jada Parker and Meechan. We're going to see Wendy Chu against Carly Bright. The New Catch Republic against Hank and Tank. I love all these names, by the way. Gallus against Tyson DuPont and Tyreek Igwe. Contract signing with Trick Williams, Javon Evans, Ethan Page, and Sean Spears. And a face-to-face between Roxanne Perez and Lola Vice. I love when we can get the contract signing and the face-to-face all on one show. And then Dynamite in Chicago. Very loaded show. Will Ospreay and Daniel Garcia for the international title. Bryan Danielson against Pac in the semifinal of the Owen Cup. Willow Nightingale against Statlander in another semifinal. Jeff Jarrett against the wild card to determine who faces Jay White. And a double championship celebration with Mercedes Moné. And we will hear from the returning Britt Baker.
Most likely the same segment, I would think.
I think those two. Very much we could have. Maybe Britt Baker tries to upstage her championship celebration yet again. You think that's Wembley? Like, that seems the obvious match.
Well, it's the next pay-per-view they have, so.
Well, yeah. That's we're talking 2 months almost until that next pay-per-view. But yeah, I think that's the direction to go. Mm-hmm. Well, wait a minute. We have the, I'm confusing it.
They don't have a July one.
Yeah, so that would make the most sense. And the final note is that joining Shayna Baszler on this Bloodsport show in Brooklyn are the Creed brothers, Julius and Brutus. So this Bloodsport card is
amazing.
I mean, they've got a great in at this point. Nick Khan must have loved that Bloodsport show he attended.
Maybe it's that, maybe it's at the urging of other people. But I think it's a great way to give credibility to, guys with your sort of like shoot backgrounds in a Shayna Baszler or in a Creed Brothers.
Would it be too gimmicky to do a tag match in Bloodsport?
Yeah, I don't know. They could just tag do anything. There could be. Yeah. So who are the people that are going to face them? I guess I'm curious.
I don't know, but is this a legitimate photo of Brutus Creed? This feels as though this is generated.
I don't know. Yeah, his jaw feels kind of out of place. I'm not really sure. Don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. July 28th. That one is coming up.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MCU Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. Tag us in a photo of yourself wearing our merch on social media, and I'll even send you a signed postcard while supplies last. That's chop-tees.com/post-wrestling.
All right. Now it is time to get into Raw from Boston, Massachusetts. WrestleTix reporting 11,924. They promoted it as a sellout on the show. And we start off with Jey Uso in the concourse area among a sea of fans and coming out through the crowd. They have really dialed in this entrance for Jey Uso. And it was a spectacular entrance. And then Michael Cole is dancing with his phone on, and this guy could not have looked more cool in this moment.
Oh man, of course. I think he throughout the show. So Pat McAfee again was not here, and the announcers actually during this entrance, as they were eating, were sending their best wishes to their colleague, and therefore I think Cole was trying to do a lot of the Patisms, including this.
Yeah, and it was Corey Graves sitting in for Pat McAfee this week, who they did state would be back next week. And Michael Cole and this dude in the punk shirt, they were so excited to see Jey Uso. Mm-hmm. Jey welcomes us to Monday Night Raw.
They're trying their best, yeah. Well, what about Yeet in the Bank, which seems to be the poster that they're using now for the show?
Yeah, that's not even a play on words. It's
No, it's not.
It's just yeet, we're using yeet in place of another word.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. So he goes through all the participants in the match, and the what chant has now become the yeet chant. Chad Gable interrupts, and he is sick of that word. He won't even repeat it, calling them Boston idiots. And then after refusing to repeat that word, he says yeet isn't even a word, but miracle is a word, and it's a miracle. He has overcome the attack by the Wyatts, his family leaving him, and beating two more monsters last week to qualify. And the Wyatts, they should be going after Jey, because Jey, you abandoned your family. Jey says he wants no smoke with the Wyatts and calls Gable manipulative and a scumbag when Gable attacks him, but Jey super kicks him, goes for the Uso splash, but Gable rolls out And then the lights go out and this crowd goes nuts for the Wyatts, music playing, and Gable hops the rail. And this was like our long shot of Gable in the dark going through the crowd with the spotlight and the cameraman following him. And he's going, he sees the various Wyatt members in the shadows and then goes up the stands, and the camera just stays on him. And it ends with Nikki Cross delivering another VHS tape among more dead security members. Did you catch them this week?
I did this week, yes.
They were dead, and hands off the VHS to Michael Cole. So we are still on our early 90s generation of technology for the Wyatts.
I mean, it's actually a lot easier to use than I think digital equipment sometimes. You know, unless you had an iPhone, but I guess the Wyatts don't have an iPhone. They're outcasted from, you know, phone plans, I guess. Yeah, this was interesting.
Maybe they need some Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I don't know if they get that there. We got our first on-screen link, at least between Jey Uso and the Wyatts throughout the segment. There was like an online exclusive where Jey, immediately after the murders on TV, was asked about what he thought of it. and he's like, yeah, that's crazy. I don't want that dude's head got splattered. Yeah, I don't know about that.
It's crazy.
But anyway, yeah, so it was that sort of answer. But he did say, I don't even want the Fireflies. You know, the Wyatts can have them, which he reiterated tonight on screen. But this just directly puts Jey Uso at least into contact with the Wyatts via Chad Gable. So we're going to get that match next week. And yeah, we'll see how they transition.
Xavier Woods against Karrion Kross opens up the show. And Graves states that Xavier Woods, he has known since he entered WWE 12 years ago. And in a line that really drew me to my favorite spokesperson, he said that Xavier Woods has as much drive, heart, and passion as anyone.
Well, he's had to do those reads just as I have, so I'm sure there are words that are fresh on his mind. Mm-hmm.
Then they reference another digital exclusive promo that they did with Karrion Kross last week, where he was asking Xavier Woods, do you want to be Shawn Michaels or do you want to be Marty Jannetty?
I don't know why they don't just have Cross cut those promos on air. I've seen his online exclusive work like 2 weeks in a row now, and they're way better than the types of promos that he's cutting on screen. So I don't know why they don't just like either put those on TV or just let him cut the same type of promos on TV.
There's a powerbomb to Woods into the post. They come back. Woods makes his comeback and gets distracted by the Final Testament on the floor, leaps off the top into a forearm smash, and Cross is controlling him when out of nowhere, Woods uses an inside cradle, catching Cross in 7 minutes and 27 seconds. So Karrion Kross loses. And the bigger question is, what did he take away from Xavier Woods that he can claim later down the road that this loss was a real loss for Xavier Woods?
Exactly.
Maybe he taught him this inside cradle technique. So yeah. AOP jumped the New Day. Kingston ends up sending them to the floor and goes for a dive, but is struck with a crosshammer. Woods is thrown into the barricade, and Cross applies an arm submission onto Kofi and just keeps it on. And this was Kofi Kingston trying to sell the hell out of this this new submission for Karrion Kross that no doubt will have maybe this will be a Cross arm breaker by next week or some play on words with a Cross. Mm. Yeah, that was that. And the feud continues, and I don't know what is attracting Xavier Woods to the Final Testament when he's just it's like these guys are easy.
Yeah, they didn't really hit as hard this week the idea of like Kofi stealing Woods' spotlight. Like I think they did really well in the promo segment that they did last week or 2 weeks prior at this point. This at this point kind of just feels like a pretty straightforward like heels versus baby faces type of feud without at least to my sense much tension being built up between Woods and Kofi. Now that could change like once the I guess tag match takes place, I'm sure. But it we can't say the match itself was that memorable. I did like Kofi selling in this submission though. He was like treating this, you know, this arm behind his head thing as like the most painful thing he's ever experienced.
He was searching for Mark Goddard.
Yes, he was. Yes.
Yeah. How about Kofi's outfit, by the way? Would you go to the beach with this?
Sounds like something that would be sold on chopped-tees.com/postwrestling. There's a 25% summer sale right now on select items. I don't know if you knew that, John.
Boy, if you go to chopped-tees right now, you're not going to have any trouble in paradise because there's many, many outfits at your disposal. But it ends in 6 days, 12 minutes and 17 seconds. So get on it.
If you don't get it now, tough luck. All right. Do you want to ruin your summer? Okay. Your summer depends only on this, whether or not you have the right shirt from chop-tees.com.
Yes. So many great options.
Look at this. Even the post snapback is on sale. Okay. Boy. I never put that thing on sale. All right. That's our biggest seller. Yeah. So,
you know how many times I've asked Way for one? He won't give me one. It's a tough one to go back,
and I'm actually going to edit this out because I don't want people to buy this on a sale price. That's just dicky. I'm going to, that's not right.
We'll put this on a VHS tape for everyone to get the information on. Damian Priest is with Dominic and asks, "Have you spoken with Rhea?" And Dom says, "Yeah, we're good." Priest says, "Well, I know that's not true because I just spoke with her and she's not good." And Dominic is caught red-handed here. And Dom says, "I'll take care of it all tonight." And Priest says, "You say this every week and you don't do anything." And he says, "The lib problem is not my fault. You sound just like my dad." This is the old Dom creeping through. Mm-hmm. And he goes into the clubhouse and there is Liv playing video games with the Judgment Day, and she goes to wish Daddy Dom good luck in his match tonight, and Balor takes Priest aside, and Priest says it's not cool for Liv to be hanging out here, and Balor defends her, stating, "She helped us win the tag titles, and what about your comment last week you made to Seth, that we need you more than you need us? What are we, your sidekicks?" Priest says, "I didn't say anything that's wrong. I'm the World Heavyweight Champion. Just like when Rhea was champion, we all needed her the most. And now you're tag champions. So can't we just say we all need each other now as champions?" He says, "I just have confidence in myself and beating Rollins at Money in the Bank." Balor says, "Well, as your brother, I'll always have your back and I'll always tell you the truth. But since you've won that title, Priest, you've changed."
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed this interaction between these two. You know, the cracks are deepening between the relationship of these two members for the first time. And I think they both have pretty logically sound arguments. You know, like, we're operating in a space where like Balor seemed like he was sort of hiding things from the rest of the Judgment Day. And now he's been very upfront about everything. He's had an excuse for everything. Just as Damian Priest has had an excuse for everything. Last week when he said, the Judgment Day need him more than he needs the Judgment Day. I mean, that sounded like real fighting words, but he had a logical excuse for why they weren't meant to be taken that way. I think they're both being scripted to, sound very logical, at least both of them gaslighting the other equally, you know, to a successful degree.
What did you think of Carlito's contribution tonight?
He's become comic relief for the group, and I think he actually is a great role for Carlito.
They re-aired the Sika tribute video that they ran on SmackDown. Really great video. Kelly is with Zelina Vega, who is not interested in chasing Dirty D. She's interested in chasing the women's title, and she's going to prove her doubters what a real champion looks like. They showed a highlight of Liv Morgan throwing out the first pitch at the Red Sox game and noting that the Red Sox beat the San Diego Padres that same night. So tied it in with the Mysterios. Liv Morgan and Zelina Vega. This was interesting because this was the crossover segment into the second hour, which usually is one of the strongest segments. And this, we saw how well these performers did along with the Mysterios last year. So I'm very interested to see how this this quarter hour performs, because this would certainly suggest that this is your top program on Raw from an interest level, as was the Rollins-Drew promo segment last week. Liv's also got a new shirt. Liv's finally on top.
Yeah, in the style of the Rhea Ripley shirt. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Liv is also doing this just constant laughing at the beginning of this. Dom walks down to the ring as Vega hits a Meteora off the apron. Then Rey comes down to offset Dom. Liv is doing the Three Amigos and then the Eddie Shuffle. So this is one night after Mercedes Moné did the exact same thing. And here we are in Boston, and we're getting the same spot from Liv Morgan as well. So it looks like she's not just taking everything from Rhea Ripley. It's her character in general.
Sure. Yes. I think everybody takes the Three Amigos.
I think Eddie has just dispersed his spots to everybody that wants a reaction.
In any given week on professional wrestling television, you're likely to see three Eddie Guerrero tribute spots. Yes.
Then Liv uses Rhea's prism lock, which Graves reminds us she said she'd take everything, but this is just too much. It's one thing to go after the boyfriend, but now my setup for my finisher, my backup submission. Graves says that Dom resembles Art Barr a lot more than he does Eddie Guerrero these days. And the crowd throughout the night was chanting, shave your mustache at Dom. Liv is hit with a code red off the turnbuckle and rolls to the floor. And that's when Rey shoves Dominic. And there's a baseball slide dropkick from Liv. And then a 619 by Vega, a tornado DDT for a huge near fall on Liv. This crowd was like buying in that Zelina Vega might win the women's title. Mm-hmm. And then Dom slides a chair to Vega, but she nails Dominic with it and then turns around into oblivion as Liv wins in 11 minutes and 35 seconds as Liv follows Dom to the back. But before she gets there, Kathy Kelly interviews her and she says that her revenge tour is going exactly as planned and dedicates this and all her future wins to Daddy Dominic.
Excellent crowd reactions in this one. They were incredibly engaged for every appearance of Dominic Mysterio, Liv Morgan, Rey Mysterio, and Zelina Vega. I thought Vega did a really good job. I think this has actually been the most substantial program she's been a part of since her run towards Rhea Ripley in Puerto Rico for the championship. And she's done really well. I can't say I they're pushing the fact that she's been doing Muay Thai training. I don't know if she just got like the best body type for like Muay Thai spots. She again tried the Aleister Black boot lift and it just didn't.
She also
really
did a tornado DDT, which is like a real staple of that.
I think I saw Peter Ertz pull that off at some point. Yeah, but overall, I think she's doing a really good job in this role, especially on the microphone. And Liv continues to be doing a great job. I love that she's now doing Rhea's moves. This was the type of thing that I think this character needed to put the focus back on the in-ring, so that the storyline isn't just exclusively being told in sort of like behind the scene or backstage or just even in her ringside segments. Like some of the storytelling taking place actually in the in spots and in moves in the match, to me, greatly helps all of this.
Then we had the first of three promos building up the main event for the men's Money in the Bank qualifier with Drew McIntyre getting his own Modelo sponsorship for his promo as he talks about Money in the Bank and shows off the CM Punk bracelet. Rollins is seen walking in the back, and in the background, we get the Paul Levesque special here. Sonya Deville is speaking with Zoe Stark, and then Shayna Baszler pulls Zoe Stark away from Sonya Deville.
Yeah, they're really sort of like building this very long term. I'm maybe so long term that you might just not care about it that much anymore. Like,
Sonya Deville's cut a very small role in this show each week.
Like, yeah, really. Like, what's the hold up here? You know, like just
do you want
together.
Me to manage you or not? Because there's other options I've got at this point. Like, she's been going at these women for like 2 months now. I don't think they're budging.
Well, at this point, I guess Natalya is a huge question mark. I think Natalya was, remember, like last we saw her, she was asking for Deville to manage her essentially. We don't know if that's going to happen. So I guess Deville is a bit desperate now.
Rollins comes out and puts over Boston as a championship city and just lists off all the sports teams' names, ending with the Celtics, as there's confetti coming down. There's like green and white confetti. So he says he has to beat Damian on Saturday. And would have to reevaluate who I am if I lost and reevaluate my legacy. Well, this seems like a very important match, but he performs best when the pressure is the highest, and he's going to take the title from Priest and take Priest away from the Judgment Day. So Finn Balor interrupts, and he's in a bad mood because everything is changing, including Damian Priest, and he is blaming Seth for all of this. But Balor is told, "You're just jealous that Damian Priest is champion," and threatens Balor. When Priest comes down, Rollins thinks this is a plan by them to attack him 2-on-1, but Priest says it's not a trap. He doesn't want Balor getting involved in his business, and they have words. Rollins wants to have the match right now, so Balor jumps Rollins and gets stopped by Priest, which allows Rollins to super kick Priest into Balor, and it looked like they just cracked heads here. And then Balor is stunned from the super kick, and it allows Priest to come back with the South of Heaven onto Rollins before he goes and checks on Balor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm enjoying the escalation of the Balor Priest tension here. No longer something we're just feeling, but they're feelings that are being explicitly stated between the two. I also thought Rollins did a great job here. You know, he like, just kind of thinking back to like the entire evolution of this current character of his, he doesn't do the fake laugh anymore. He's completely taken that out, but he still retained a lot of the more charismatic sort of flamboyant parts of the character, at least in the way he dresses, in the way he orchestrates the sing-along, and even like at the start of his promos, doing a lot of the sort of like over-the-top talking to the crowd. But then he figures out like a really good way of changing the tone to get serious, and he manages to, I think, find a pretty good balance between the character and also like delivering a really strong serious promo in almost every appearance that he does now.
Backstage, Priest is with Balor and just says he needs to do this on his own at Money in the Bank, and Balor agrees to this, so this probably sets up Balor showing up.
And Balor either intentionally did not fist bump him, I guess, or he didn't see it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Left him hanging.
It's a WrestleMania program right there.
That's just the fist bump. So they announced the schedule for this weekend. So they're doing a kickoff on Friday before SmackDown, which will air on their socials, followed by SmackDown. And then the countdown show is 2 hours on Saturday, beginning at 5 p.m., and the show begins at 7, followed by a post show, and then a 1 hour countdown before Heatwave on Sunday. A lot of wrestling this weekend in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And that GCW is running on Friday night, I believe.
I'm not sure.
They're at the Opera House.
You got the Sami Zayn stand-up show as well on Thursday.
That's right. The Sami Zayn show is on Thursday. Dakota Kai, Ivy Nile, and Zoe Stark are in the qualifying match, and Stark lands a missile dropkick on Kai. They go to the break. Ivy Nile hits the double bulldog off the turnbuckle, and then she's hitting German suplexes, and we did the same, the ringside camera operator, where we just stayed on the floor for a prolonged period of time, and then they just went back to the regular shooting of the match. Scorpion kick lands for Dakota Kai onto Stark, and then she hits the chiropractor onto Ivy Nile, onto Stark, but Nile makes the save. When Kairi Sane runs down, gets onto the apron, Nile swings at her, and Kai attacks Nile. When Isla Dawn and Elba Fire come after Kairi, and Stark nails Kai, hits the Z360 and wins in 8 minutes and 43 seconds without the help of Sonya Deville. So she's doing just fine.
But she's going to lose Money in the Bank, and I guess that'll be Sonya saying, "Hey, I told you." So I don't know.
It's because you didn't have a clever nickname if you had won the match.
Yeah.
That put you in the wrong mental mindset.
That's it. I enjoyed the match, and in particular, the focus on Ivy Nile here. Her big comeback coming out of the commercial break was entirely captured on that low angle steadicam, and it made her look great. First of all, it also gave me a lot of appreciation for just like this stuff in general, professional wrestling, you know, like a match, this entire thing plays out like it's an action scene from a movie, but it's only one take. And I know this, I've watched wrestling for decades at this point, but seeing it like that, you know, in one shot without any camera cuts from that sort of vantage point just continues to give me a different appreciation for all of this. So Ivy now looked great, I thought, in this match.
Now it's time for the running of the VHS tape. with Bo Dallas and Uncle Howdy once again. Their long sit-down interview. And Bo is asking, how much longer are we going to keep doing this? He says he was destined to do this and asks, do you think you're special? And Bo gives his philosophy on what it means to be special and says, we are the ones that everyone abandoned and wanted to forget, so we made them notice us. And he compares them to clay that are destined to become something beautiful and to become a family. Even now, the false prophets are belittling their families for their own gain. It's disgusting. They must pay for their sins. And Uncle Howdy asks, and you think this is your responsibility? And Bo says that I am the voice of the reckoning. When Uncle Howdy says, I am the reckoning. And then we have these two in unison stating, I'm nobody. I have a family. I am the reckoning. Dude, I had to watch this like three times to get through this because I was like, I know I'm missing parts of this. Their voices just like go over top one another. Then Bo is left in the room alone. And then Howdy is alone. What did you think of the second video?
I liked it. I thought, you know, last week was successful enough that like I wanted to see more of it and they gave us more. This just seemed to show the complete transformation from Bo Dallas to an Uncle Howdy and almost basically kind of give you an origin story for the character.
Are we going to get these for all of them?
I doubt it. First of all, I don't think the others could really pull it off. Like they don't really kind of have the backstory. Well, you know what? Like they all kind of should have something, right? Because they're all supposed to be shunned and they're all supposed to be the outcast and they're all supposed to have their own individual story. So maybe
2 weeks each and we get 10 weeks of VHSs.
I don't know if I need a 2 week Sam Shaw origin explanation.
Oh, give me five. How did he go from breaking and entering at the Miz's house to this?
I don't know. But this also kind of like conveyed the importance of this bond of this new family of guys that I guess were unwanted by the company. And when you're talking about Eric Rowan, that sure is. Yeah, that checks out. Nikki Cross, I guess that checks out too, because like she was a background player for like what felt like
they didn't cut her.
Yeah, but like
they rehired Dexter,
but they didn't have a role for her. But Loomis,
Joe Gacy has had a role this whole time.
He kind of has, yeah.
I'd argue he's been overpushed in NXT.
But he was never called up, okay? Never properly called up in the draft, and that's going to be his argument.
But now he's been called up.
This is not a call-up.
He's calling himself up.
He murdered. He got called up through murder, basically.
Okay, well, they haven't called the authorities yet, so he should be lucky. Like, he could be wanted.
Well, how is a cop going to catch ghosts? You know, these people just lights out, disappear. You know, it's impossible to catch them. Anyway, this video, I think, seemed to convey the importance of the bond of family to this group. And that led the way for Bo Dallas to explain why he hates people who are anti-family. The line was, now there's false prophets belittling their family for their own gain. So Chad Gable took that to mean him, but I think most would be taking it as a reference to Jey Uso.
Well, that was the follow-up. I really like the production of these. I didn't think this one was as effective as last week. I really enjoyed last week. But this is, regardless, I think you can tell that they have a better handle on this, the Wyatt Six, this time around, and trying to give some kind of grounded human motivations behind these characters, mm-hmm. and not trying to present them as these like monsters from like these fictional monsters, but rather these are people that have been driven to this state that they are reflecting.
Yeah. I think Bo is good in the role, at least from what we've seen.
This
here
is the best Bo has done in any kind of role. Like, you have to be, I questioned if he would be able to pull this off. In these 2 weeks, he has shown, I think he's been great in this role, which is a very tough role to play.
Yeah, I'm sure so much of this is incredibly personal for him, but it is coming across on screen in the form of like really good work. So I hope that continues. Like that, this has never been a question, right? Like the pre-production, the post-production stuff attached to all of this has never been a question with the WWE. And the people responsible for this sort of work. It's the in-ring that's the big question mark still. How are they going to eventually turn this into a match?
Gable finds Otis in catering and says, "I need your help," after just seeing the Wyatt video. And he acknowledges he said some hurtful things. And, "I know you hate me." And Otis says, "I don't hate you. But this is not our problem. It's your problem." Gable says, "They could come for you next. And I'll be there for you because you're my number one guy." And then Maxine and Tozawa walk in and ask if everything's all right. And Michael Cole is pleading for Otis not to fall for Chad Gable's insincere pleading.
Yeah, so like they're having Gable like really work his Stockholm Syndrome hold over Otis. And like it does remind me a lot of like maybe the type of relationship Vince McMahon must have had over a lot of his talents, you know? Like, you know, how many number one guys has he had? And how many number one guys were willing to do everything he wanted just to hear that, you know?
You're taking this a lot deeper than I thought.
Yeah. Maybe I'm thinking too hard about it.
I was kind of paying attention to his spread there of what he had on his two plates, catering.
Looks like a nice sandwich, like a Boston donut. Cream donut, appropriate.
Baked
potato. Looks some rice, some broccoli.
It's not so bad if you're not booked on the show. You know, you still get
not
a nice
at
meal.
All. Yeah, no.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. Tag us in a photo of yourself wearing our merch on social media, and I'll even send you a signed postcard while supplies last. That's chop-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Rey Mysterio against Dominic. And no Snoop Dogg, no Low Rider for this entrance. Dominic takes over as they return from the break, and a drop toe hold sends Dominic into the buckle, and he's ramming his head. Liv Morgan comes down to distract Rey, and Dominic goes for a catapult into a half crab. Rey makes it to the rope, and then it's Dominic going for the Three Amigos. And Rey drop kicks him, sets up for the 619, but Liv pulls Dominic to the floor, and Dominic drop kicks Dominic, who lands on top of Liv, who holds on to Dominic. And the crowd was just losing their mind here for this. And they start, Rey starts arguing with them and turns around. Dominic super kicks him, gets a two count, and Vega runs down attacking Liv. So Dom sets up Rey for a 619, landing it, and Vega yanks Liv off the apron, and this sends Dominic off the top where he loses his balance. Rey hits a 619 in the corner and the splash to win in 10 minutes 58 seconds as Liv profusely apologizes to Dominic and follows him to the back.
Just like the prior segment involving these four, this just garnered a fantastic reaction from this crowd, like among the loudest they were the entire evening. I think they're doing a great job with this entire angle and these teases of physicality between Liv Morgan and Dominic are some of, like, they're performing perfectly for the role, I think.
Sheamus did his video package talking about he just passed his 15-year anniversary with the WWE, and noting that he previously won the Money in the Bank. We got the reliable old photos of him and Drew McIntyre to show, and stating that Ilya Dragunov reminds him of himself. Also on this show, they did air a Ludwig Kaiser promo about how he broke his ribs. Sheamus broke his ribs last week, and he is coming back not just to beat Sheamus, but to end the Celtic Warrior once and for all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what does this mean? Like, broken ribs? Is he actually out?
Well, he wasn't on the show tonight. But I mean, this could have just been
just a reason to give him some time off. Yeah,
I mean, he could have been hurt. There's a potential, but it also plays very much into the angle. They showed Shinsuke Nakamura from 303 over the weekend in Rey Tsuruya's corner against Carlos Hernandez. You would have loved this fight. It was like watching a. Like, think about your most entertaining, like, grappling match that was just tons of fun submission stuff and tons of counters. This was like a really under the radar fight. So Nakamura clearly getting in this 22-year-old's ear. Sami Zayn comes out and he says it feels great to be here as the IC champion and discusses his match with Bron Breakker. And he hears all the chatter that people think Bron's going to run through him, but he is here to proclaim, I will beat Bron Breakker at Money in the Bank. So Breakker comes out, says that he did gain some respect from Zayn because everyone else is running from me, whereas you offered me a title shot and came to me. But he says he is going to break him on Saturday. Zayn says that if you know who I am, I've been broken thousands of times. I come back every single time. And if you don't know who I am, then maybe you're not as smart as you think you are, and you're not as good as you think you are. And Braun is about to leave when he turns and just runs at full speed, spearing Zayn. And then he goes to leave, and we get the overhead shot, which is now just going to be the tip-off that you're getting a crazy Braun spot. And this guy runs so goddamn fast around this ring. And Zayn, we're still on the overhead camera, and he leapfrogs as Braun crashes into the steps. This was an amazing shot. And Zayn attacks him, hits an exploder in the ring, and goes for the Huluva when Breakker runs out of the corner and spears Zayn for a second time, lifting the title. What a great segment to set up this match on Saturday.
It really was. I mean, first, the talking I thought was really good, too. You got a fired up Sami Zayn promo. He's up against an unbeatable monster, which is able to, like, it's showcasing Sami at his best, you know, this type of character. You got to hear a bit of Braun speaking at length, too. And I thought Braun sounded really good. But the physicality on top of it all was really just, I think, the most memorable part of this entire thing. Like, those spears from Braun, they're such short range spears. Like, he doesn't even have to charge the ropes, but like they look so fast, faster than like really like a lot of guys do the spear, but he legitimately has like maybe the most impressive looking one. They had Sami Zayn, like, you know, look smart in being able to scout the first or at least the second attempt and able to leapfrog it, but they ultimately had Braun still on top by the end, which perfectly sets up the match on Saturday.
Maybe we'll get an angle at Sami Zayn and friends.
I think you could expect it. Yeah, why wouldn't you?
Knock knock.
he would imagine that voice heckling from the crowd.
Tell a funny joke.
Kathy Kelly is with Damage Control in the back, and Kai says that failing to qualify will not affect Io Sky's plans. She is going to win, and Dakota is sick of all the people getting involved in their business. So Lyra Valkyria gets into their business and walks in stating that Io is not going to win. And then we get these two women that join Lyra and attack. I'm not kidding. I rewound this 3 times. I had to watch this in slow motion because I, for the life of me, did not know who these people were. And then I finally identified Caden Carter. And by process of elimination, I figured out it was Katana Chance, who was the other one. But the announcers never said it. There was no angle where you saw their faces in this. I had no idea who these women were.
Yeah, like this would have actually suggested Alba Fire and Isla Dawn from earlier.
That's what I thought, but it was clearly not them because you could see their hair color.
Yeah. I remembered Chance and Carter having interaction with Lyra from previous weeks, so that just kind of deduced it for me. But I'm sure they realized this was a bit of a fumble, too. You couldn't really see their faces at all.
Then they recap the Bloodline acknowledgement ceremony, which was a phenomenal angle on Friday, and Graves explains that Paul Heyman is an old man. We'll keep you updated on his health, but it's going to be a long time before we see the wise man again. So it certainly suggests that Paul Heyman will be off television for the foreseeable future. Then the video for Ilya Dragunov as he is previewing the match, and he states he will win the briefcase on Saturday or die trying. He let it hang that I'll either win or I'll die in this ladder match. And, well, he's not going to have to do either, as it turns out. Next week, they're in Ottawa, Jey Uso against Chad Gable, and Lyra, Katana Chance, and Caden Carter versus Damage Control. Main event time, Drew McIntyre, Ilya Dragunov, and Sheamus in the final men's qualifier. Ilya is set aside by Drew, so he comes back and just boots Drew to the floor and starts off with Sheamus. We get all three men down. Ilya hits a running knee to Sheamus and hits a leaping drop kick off the top to Drew. Hits an H-bomb off the apron to Sheamus, then comes off with a senton to Drew and hits him with an H-bomb. Drew kicks out. We had a big Tower of Doom spot with Ilya launching them off the turnbuckle. And then he hits the Constantine special. I have to say this, for the way this was laid out, like, yes, Drew McIntyre was winning this match, but they made Ilya Dragunov feel like the focus of the match. Like, he got a lot of big moments. I think everything was built around Ilya and his offense.
That's sort of been the case for a lot of these Money in the Bank qualifying three ways. You know, the up and comer is the one that is at least hopeful to leave the match with, like, some sort of, I don't know, renewed impression. They did it with Ivy just earlier tonight.
Drew sets up for the Claymore, but it's stopped with a Torpedo Moscow landing, and Drew rolls to the floor, and you can tell Ilya his anger at this, as he got a three vein going on the forehead on that one. Ilya launches off the top for a coast-to-coast when Sheamus connects with a brogue kick in midair, calls for another one, hits it, but Drew pulls him out, sends Ilya into the timekeeper's table, so Sheamus and Drew are left alone. He sidesteps the brogue kick and hits the Claymore out of nowhere. Drew McIntyre prevails in 17 minutes and 19 seconds in a excellent main event.
Outstanding TV main event. This felt like a great addition to, like, the Drew Sheamus catalog. I mean, Sheamus especially has created this, like, great little pocket universe where guys like Gunther, guys like Drew have been able to drop in and have these incredibly memorable matches, and Ilya Dragunov just fits so perfectly in that space. You know, this was a great showcase for Dragunov. So hard hitting, so, like, perfectly technical and just intense. So I've been really enjoying these Money in the Bank qualifying three ways, and I have to expect that there'll be a tradition going forward, you know, where it's not just Money in the Bank that we're looking forward to, but a series of triple threat matches that I think all have been, well, for the most part, I don't want to say all of them, but, like, for the most part, almost all of them have been really good.
And the show ended with Kathy Kelly interviewing Drew inside of the ring. They had about 40 seconds, and he said, "I told you I would win this war. I'm walking into Money in the Bank and leaving Toronto as world heavyweight champion," as he puts on CM Punk's bracelet.
So Drew McIntyre now, Andrade, Jey Uso, Carmelo Hayes, Chad Gable, and LA Knight. Who do you think will win?
There's certainly the story of Drew winning this thing and holding on to the briefcase. Like, realistically, I think this is one where they've set this up in such a way that I could see, like, multiple candidates that would make sense, because if you're doing the short term, Drew winning this could make sense. If you're doing this as, like, a long-term play, well, you have to look at, like, who do they have plans for down the road, 6 months from now, 8 months from now, 9 months from now. Mm-hmm. Andrade, I don't really see it with him. But again, it's what do they see in him, like, 9 months from now, potentially? Jey Uso is an option. I like the idea of Drew winning, just because I think there's a lot of storyline options. But he's also one that, I mean, it's not going to be make or break if he wins this. And I think they're looking at this as being something to catapult someone, and Drew does not need catapulting.
No,
it would be if they had such a great storyline idea that involves this briefcase.
Well, that could be reason. It could be reason enough. You know?
You could do the short holding of the briefcase, and he gets screwed again when he cashes in, and that's the then he gets labeled as, you know, the guy that loses in Scotland, fails to cash in, and that is your latest for CM Punk to get his revenge.
Sure. I think at this point we almost have to look even beyond the CM Punk program for Drew McIntyre and ask, like, what does Drew McIntyre have for a WrestleMania, for instance? And is a Money in the Bank, you know, that much of a better device on him than any of these other guys, just to kind of heighten his chase for the championship and whatever major story you could tell? I think, like, he's sort of the safe bet, but I also think I also don't think, like, the character needs that sort of device. So I think LA Knight could be a real option as a babyface choice. I think Jey Uso, obviously, Yeet in the Bank, sure. But I don't know. I don't know how either of them would sort of be as like babyface characters holding the Money in the Bank. Of the two, we also have to think about who they would challenge, you know. But I mean, title cash-ins can take place so long from now that like we have no idea really what the scene is going to be by the time that they're, thinking.
They've also made it clear that this is not necessarily going to be the, like, you have LA Knight of like cashing it in to get his U.S. title match with Logan Paul. I think like long term, like Carmelo Hayes could certainly use something that, again, you don't have to go with immediately.
Do you think within a year he will ascend to a world title level where he can carry a show?
I think that he could at least, you have the elevation of your secondary titles, and I would say yes, I think you could.
I don't know. I'm not sure. Like, I think he's somewhat untested. Whereas I think like Jey Uso is already kind of in that position, right? But you're right. This is
historically like something where it's not the people who are ready now. It's that down the road you feel that you will elevate them to that level. It's it's an interesting match with the candidates that you do have here. And Drew adds a ton to this match by being involved in it. So that's the men's one. And then the women, we have Io Sky, Chelsea Green, Lyra Valkyria, Tiffany Stratton, Naomi, and Zoe Stark.
Yeah, to me, I don't think Zoe qualifying changes my thoughts on it. I think Stratton is still the very clear favorite.
Damian Priest, for the women, I haven't given it too much thought, to be honest. I think you could go with Tiffany Stratton. I think that you could go with, I don't see them going with EO again.
Yeah, like a babyface pick, sure, Naomi, I think would fill that. But I think like having Stratton a heel win it would be a great gimmick to put on her, just to kind of give her that sort of sheen and luster of somebody who's on the cusp of being champion at any point. And having Naya
for maximizing like the entertainment value, like Chelsea Green, you would get the most in terms of. Absolutely. No, way. Like, we're talking about her with that briefcase every single week. I think you could go with that.
But it's like it's the same effect that the tag titles were on her and like characters like R-Truth. You completely rob
them
of credibility.
And they do all these stories. Like,
yeah, and I hate them all. I mean, I think it's one thing to like put the tag titles on them, but like Money in the Bank should be somebody that is, it's your spotlight on the talent that is next in line to be the star. And I don't think that's Chelsea's role.
But you also want this on someone where you can get mileage out of, like,
Stratton. Tiffany Stratton.
Does she need this? Do you need this attached to her?
Well, does anybody need it?
She's already at this. Yes. You could put her in the title match next month and people would buy it.
But a year's worth of storytelling of her teasing with Nia Jax backing her up, I think that does that much more for her over the course of the next year.
All right. And then the rest, it's just a 5-match show. So you have Damian Priest and Seth Rollins, Sami Zayn and Bron Breakker, and then the 6-man with Cody Rhodes, Randy Orton, and Kevin Owens against the Bloodline, who they are still just showcasing all four of the Bloodline and have not outlined which three of the four are in the match.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm sure more clarity to be had on Friday.
All right. So there you go. That is Money in the Bank. Let us go on to some feedback and super chats.
Let's go to feedback. What do we got?
Matthew writes,
We got one super chat. Sorry about that. Slim Sieber sends $5 to say, has there been anybody that has been booked as strong as Rhea and Roman have without even appearing on TV that you could think of?
Historically, I mean, they have, they're doing a great job with them off television, but it's Sting. Not like it's Sting, Hogan when he disappeared and came back to avenge his defeat or his attack by Earthquake. I mean, there are stories. Austin being out, they, you know, kind of kept him in the background of all that was going on. But they're doing a very effective job. Like, when those two show up, it's going to be gigantic.
Yeah, so yeah.
They've set the table really well for them to come back and not be... They're out of sight, but they're the furthest thing from being out of mind.
I think with Rhea especially, they should be commended because they didn't plan for this, during WrestleMania, for instance. Like, they didn't know that she would be out for as long as she has. And with Roman, I'm sure they at least had some idea. But with Rhea, they've been able to pivot with Liv and Dom and the rest of Judgment Day so incredibly well.
Matthew writes, this was a decent episode of Raw with a great main event, awesome promo segment from Sammy and Braun, and another good Wyatt 6 video. The only thing that stumped me on this episode was the finish to Dom and Rey. I figured that Liv's interference would lead to Dom winning. The Judgment Day seems to be headed for an inevitable split. Who do you guys think leaves SummerSlam as world champion? It almost has to be Gunther. It makes no sense for him to lose after all they've done to build him up. I'm also banking on Punk screwing Drew again, setting up their inevitable SummerSlam showdown.
I think it has to be Gunther, in my opinion. I mean, they're doing the Berlin show afterwards. So it makes sense that he would go in as like your big champion. I also think like he's still got an aura of like being practically undefeated about him that I don't think you want to mess up, you know, until he becomes champion and loses the championship. Like if he wins the title at SummerSlam, he still very much carries that basic practical undefeated streak with one lone blemish attached to him. So I think they have to be very careful about that. Anything else? Oh, Muggin says, Liv Morgan's string of good luck continued as the Oko Yono to Judgment Day's demise took another step forward. The funny thing about Yoko breaking up the Beatles, and then he's got a meme from Buffy. This is Buffy, right? Or is it Angel? I don't know, one of those shows. It's the blonde vampire dude who says, the point is they were once a real powerful group. It's not a stretch to say they ruled the world. When they broke up, everyone blamed Yoko. But the group split itself apart. She just happened to be there. That's very much the truth. You should go ahead and watch Get Back. I mean, I don't think she did anything wrong. The group was enough to break themselves up. Finn's jealousy is obvious over how the world title changed Priest, and it could be the cause of his impending exile on Saturday. Solid wrestling tonight with the main event, with Drew, Ilya, Sheamus being the clear-cut standout, Liv Zelina being a close second, and the Wyatt 6 deep dive all added up to a good go-home episode. Hey, right. I wanted to ask you, John, how do you type Wyatt 6?
Let me look. I don't know if I even typed it in my notes. Why is there a debate about this?
Well, because I think like officially it's supposed to be Wyatt Sick number 6.
Oh yeah, you have people that use the number 6 and then others that just write SICKS.
Yeah. What do you stand on that?
I guess I don't know. I don't think I've ever like typed it on the website in any of like my news or anything. What should I use? What would be the preferred? Let's have a style guide discussion right now.
Well, what is it on the website? Well, like, what is it on WWE?
WWE?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to this. It's not.
Has WWE didn't recognize it as Wyatt? Because on shop, it's actually 6, SICKS. Okay. I don't know, dude. I don't know.
Okay. On their YouTube video, it's just SICKS.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. So who the hell came out with SICK number 6?
I don't know. I don't know if it was a fan thing. I'm just looking at one Wyatt 6 video from July. From tonight's video, they just wrote SICKS.
Okay, then that's what I'm going with. Yeah.
Okay, that's it. Meeting adjourned. Okay, and that will bring an end to Rewind to Raw. So a lot coming up this week. We've got all of our regular shows, Pollock and Thurston and Rewind to Dynamite Wednesday, and then Thursday, MCU Later. Friday, Rewind Away. We go back to 1993, Way's the event that pulled Way in. And boy, yeah. What did you think you were going to be trapped with by this event? Did you watch this on pay-per-view? Did you rent this?
I saw it live, actually.
Wow, you saw this live.
Through illegal means at the time.
Yeah. My goodness. Yeah. Did your dad watch this with you?
I don't know. I don't think so. Yeah.
Did you wear a toga?
I don't think I knew what a toga was at that point, but I saw one and I was hooked. Yes. Maybe we'll wear togas for the review.
We will not, but we will discuss the world's largest toga party, where I don't think any fans showed up dressed in togas as I was watching this.
Were you supposed to? Did they get the memo?
That's what they were encouraging you on TV to do. They wanted fans to dress up. That's why they promoted it as the world's largest toga party. It wasn't Gorilla Monsoon and Jim Ross and Gene Okerlund are going to comprise the world's largest toga party. It was supposed to be everyone does this, and pretty much no one did, if you could see the crowd. Yeah. Okay, that's going to be discussed more on Friday, and then all of your coverage from the Toronto events, we will have you covered here at postwrestling.com.
If you're in Toronto this Saturday for Money in the Bank, show up to Wide Open, 2 p.m. Eastern time, or really anytime after 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern. Hang out with us. It's a free event. Postwrestling.com/live for all the details right before Money in the Bank.
We hope to see you there on Saturday. And that is it for Rewind to Raw.